CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Jennifer Evans will be giving us an update on Therabounce. So what's the latest with Therabounce?
So Therabounce has definitely had a very, very busy summer and a very busy fall this year, which has been fantastic. This summer we ran our inclusive summer camp for kiddos age 4 till 9, and it was an absolute blast, filled with bouncing, recreational therapy, a lot of sensory activities, social skill development. So it was really fantastic to kind of pull away a little bit from the more therapeutic side of Therabounce and really tap into that recreational side this summer. And then now, that being said, we are really full swing with our therapeutic side, offering one-on-one rebound therapy sessions to children and our ever-growing adult caseload. So it's been really, really exciting. Our team continues to grow, as does our client base. And we hope to continue that, you know, throughout the rest of this year and into next year.
So, for those who might have missed our prior interview, what are some of the benefits of using trampoline therapy, and especially in working with kids, finding a cool and innovative way of providing them with the therapies they need?
Absolutely. So, the trampoline is a really novel environment for a lot of our clients, and an environment that either they've had access to independently, whether that's through the use of a backyard trampoline at different areas like Sky Zone, or for a lot of our clients, it's actually been a place that they've not felt comfortable or able to access in the past. I'm often getting, you know, even adults coming who have never set foot on a trampoline because they just thought or were told that it was not a space for them. So we're really changing the perceptions there. And regarding the benefits of the trampoline, there's so many to list, but I'll kind of spitfire them off here. First and foremost, we get really good engagement from our clients because it's such a preferred activity and a preferred environment. And with that, we're able to tap into coordination, self-regulation, strengthening, balance, social skills, communication skills, all of these pieces while using what is a really intrinsically motivating environment for our clients. So we get these benefits, you know, tenfold, while also getting the engagement from our client base, where the therapy feels, you know, a little bit secretive and is disguised in the recreation and the fun of it all.
So in that sense, do you find that people are more willing to go out and share what they've experienced by saying, hey, I did this really fun thing, but it had the side effect of just helping me out, become a little stronger?
Absolutely. And I find that, you know, from the parents that bring the kiddos in, as well as from our, you know, older teens and our young adults who are really advocating and sharing Therabounce themselves. And, you know, the first thing I hear is, oh my gosh, they had so much fun, or I had so much fun. And then comes, you know, the engagement and the benefits. You know, they're so much stronger, they're so much more focused at school, their endurance has improved, all of these pieces. So definitely getting those awesome little testimonials coming really organically now, of clients and parents who are just, you know, seeing the benefits tenfold.
So are there any challenges in getting a client onto a trampoline and getting them started in the therapy practice?
I think that's a huge question. There's always going to be some barriers, and I think the ones that we really face are, coming all the way up from where the referrals are coming from and having, pediatricians and therapists, viewing trampolines as very, dangerous, unstructured pieces of equipment that certainly have more risk versus benefit. However, that's more viewing, trampoline parks and backyard trampolines where the support is not provided one-on-one. However, in our setting, the risks are so low and mitigated by that one-on-one support and environment. So I would say that's definitely one of the barriers in just getting, the word out there is a lot of, we are finding some therapists and some medical professionals who almost have that outdated thinking surrounding trampolines and are a little bit closed-minded to seeing the therapeutic benefits. On the other end, we're always seeing families, especially during, these hard times, facing financial barriers to accessing our services as we are a private organization. So that can be, certainly a barrier to kiddos coming on. And then just parents not being sure about what it can offer their kids, especially really physically complex kiddos who may have, G-tube or a trach or, a variety of these things who parents, feel very nervous putting them in a new environment. But I always find that once, they get out and come and try or just come and see it firsthand, that barrier gets, brought down quite a lot.
So in recent memory, has there been any success story that stands out for you? I'd imagine with the camps you mentioned, it'd be something.
Yeah. So I've got really two that come to mind, one with a more therapeutic base to it and one with more of a recreational social base. So I'll start on the social side of things. We had a little guy come to camp this summer who was very content in engaging in a lot of independent play and not necessarily involving himself in the structured activities or playing alongside or with other campers. However, throughout time and really tapping into what his preferred play, what does he love to play with? What are his sensory needs? What can we really tap into? And we found that with him, the parachute was a really, really engaging environment that he could engage with other people, doing all the same things together. And just through the repetition of, including the parachute in our morning activities every day and getting him comfortable with that social setting, we then saw him branching out and, joining other kiddos on trampolines, joining other kids playing different sensory games and really seeking out that socialization piece. Whereas before, he really didn't know or feel comfortable in socializing with other peers. So I think that's a really good testament to, finding what, makes a kiddo tick. What do they really enjoy? And utilizing that to support their social or communication needs. So that was a big win at camp for sure, is, encouraging and supporting our kiddos to get these social benefits, because we know that friendships and socialization is so important to mental health and mental well-being. And then on a therapeutic side of things, we actually had our first Therabounce intensive come this summer. I had a little girl fly all the way out from Edmonton to come and do Therabounce for a week. She did 6 hours of therapy over that time, and the gains that we saw were incredible. As far as her physical development, we saw improvements in coordination and balance and ability to push off both feet when jumping, improvements in confidence. And then, on top of that, her speech exploded throughout the week, and her ability to communicate and, share her thoughts and feelings improved so much so. And mom continues to report back to me, and now we're about a month and a half out of the intensive, and mom is still seeing gains popping up. She's now in gymnastics, which never would have been an option for her before because she didn't have the focus or, the coordination to do a group setting, and now she does. So yeah, definitely two really big, exciting things that have happened over the past couple of months for us.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Cameron.
Of course.
In this segment of our show, Jessica Lewis will be telling us a little bit about the latest with her training efforts. So what's the latest with your training routine?
So I've actually made a pretty big change. I've started working with a new coach. His name is Jeff Harris, and he's one of the national team coaches for Canada. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to train with him in Victoria, BC as an international athlete.
So what are some of the new techniques that he's been exploring with you?
So one of the really big things that we're changing is my seating position in my racing chair. So we've actually just secured a welder to make the changes to the chair. So hopefully that will be happening next week. And then we're also trialing a few different types of gloves that we use to push the chair, as well as a few different techniques in my start, especially for the 100 meter.
So what's your goal for the upcoming games?
So I'm competing in the Pan American Games in November in Chile. So I'm hoping to do really well there. And the ultimate goal is to qualify for the Paris Paralympic Games for next summer.
So, as one who's traveled basically the world in terms of her athletics, what are some of the things that stand out for you as an athlete with a disability?
I think, you know, it's kind of the lasting effect that these games kind of produce for different countries. You know, just seeing the shift in some people's perspectives on what people with disabilities can achieve is just absolutely phenomenal, and to be a part of that experience is something that I'm truly grateful for.
So, of all the places you've been, what are some of the most accessible things you've seen?
A lot of places have pretty good, like, transport. Like, coming from Bermuda, a lot of our transport isn't accessible yet. That's something that, you know, we're working towards. So when going to other countries or places, it's really cool to see kind of the things that they've done transport-wise. Especially, like, in Canada here, having the ramps that come out of the bus. You know, it's such a simple thing to do, and it's so, you know, accommodating to everybody.
So, in terms of fitness equipment and training, I'd imagine that you use some modified equipment, and do you find that generally it's available to you when you need it?
Yeah, so there's not too many places that make the racing chairs, but I think that's going to start to shift. And I think there's going to be a lot more research put into, you know, kind of the materials that can be used to make the equipment, as well as more people, you know, getting interested in providing that as a service.
So in that sense, do you see sort of a global shift in the interest in things like the Paralympics and the Pan American Games?
Do you find I do, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, you think the world is taking more notice and recognizing that whether you have a disability or not, it's still an intense competition and a great game.
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And, you know, I think that shows as well with the amount of coverage that the games are slowly starting to gain. And I think, you know, a lot of people are realizing that, you know, athletes with a disability put in just as much work as an able-bodied athlete does to get to these games. So it's pretty amazing to see that shift as well.
So do you have any advice for aspiring athletes who want to be the next Jess Lewis out there?
Definitely just go for it. You know, don't be afraid to take on the challenge of something new. And just trying to find, you know, the sport that fits you and, you know, your ability level and something that you have a lot of passion for. A big thing for me with this move to Victoria, because it was definitely a huge life-changing thing. I just kept telling myself, you know, you can't keep doing the same things over and over again and expect a different result. And to just, you know, be brave and make that choice to go after an opportunity.
So what are the next steps in your training for the upcoming games?
So the big one is getting the change in my racing chair. And right now we're in a phase where we're building a lot of volume in training. And then about 3 weeks out from the games, we're going to slowly start tapering the volume and focus a little bit more on the technical side of the race.
So, as an athlete, how do you keep yourself from giving up? How do you keep your mind focused on what you need to do, taking that next step forward, even if it's hard?
So that's a really great question, because there are days that it is tough. But I think I just have built such an amazing support system around me with my family, and we have an amazing training group here in Victoria, that, you know, we all just kind of push each other and kind of hold each other accountable as well, which is something that's important to do in the process. And, you know, just try and find ways to make the training fun. And, you know, my coach Jeff is absolutely phenomenal as well in helping to motivate us and keep us focused on, you know, what the goal is.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making cocktails. Maybe you're packing bowls. Even while we're distancing, it's important to remember, alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks could save a life. And we can do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit of an update from our friend Jessica Lewis about her training efforts, and Jennifer Evans gave us an update on Therabounce. In this segment of our show, Michael Canutti will be telling us a little bit about his work with Autism Ontario. So what's the latest with your autism work?
Well, primarily I do media communications, and I'm in charge of a managing editor of our quarterly member magazine, Autism Matters. It's really quite a privilege for me, as I'm an autistic person. It's quite a privilege for me to do that, because it helps, I guess, in a way. It's a way of just telling stories of people with autism and their lives, their families. And I've met a lot of interesting people along the way, from astronomers and to race car drivers, people with autism, to average people, just, you know, with lives, to with stories to tell. So it really is interesting, Matt.
So in that sense, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning autism?
Sometimes we do. It's usually, but, you know, in terms of the, sometimes we have encountered it, sometimes I've encountered it personally. And certainly within, and that we also encountered ableism as well, right? Certainly in recent memory, there was an incident not too long ago where a dog rescue wouldn't give a family of an autistic child a dog because they believed all such a negative stereotypes about autistic people, and that they thought all autistic people were violent. And this is all quite, you know, incorrect information and bordered on ableism, but they wouldn't do it. Fortunately, the family in question was able to get a dog from another rescue who were quite understanding. So, but we deal with that a lot too, stereotypes, and, you know, and it's quite unfortunate in this day and age that still happens.
So, through your work, How do you clear up those myths and misperceptions and get to the reality of what autism really is?
Education. That's one word, just education. I think also getting people, it helps also that once people see you, they meet you, they know this is the true face of autism. I mean, autism, of course, is many different types of autism out there, right? Many different faces, many different people, many different. So I'm but one face. When they meet me, it's but one face, right?
So if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. So, but you know, you meet one person, and that, you know, helps, right?
So how do you go about reaching out to interested parties to let them know about the education work you're doing?
Well, education, primarily, I do my educating primarily through the magazine. You know, it goes up quarterly, and when I look for stories, look for people with, like, self-advocates, people like yourself, for example, with an interesting story to tell. The people will reach out to me, or friends or family will say, somebody will say, look, have you seen this story? Or it's something I have read. For example, there was a recent who's an astronomer who's going to appear in the fall issue of Autism Matters, and she wrote a book, a memoir, and I read the memoir just out of interest, and in the last page she discovered how she relates how in her mid-40s, she discovered she was autistic. You know? And so there's a whole story there, and I reached out to her. She's a Canadian astronomer working at MIT, and we had a very good interview. It was quite a good conversation. I mean, you know, so it's through meeting people, through telling their stories. It's through also talking about. We also do stories on research. We talk about, we also taken something very recently too. We talked about autistic representation in the media. As you know, there are a lot of programs out there, some of them which have autistic people on them. Most recently, there was a movie out very recently, A Man Called Otto. And although they didn't mention it by name, but there was a very, if you've seen the movie, you go, gee, that guy is autistic, right?
So,
and so we do a regular panel on that where we get some self-advocates together and we review and we discuss everything. I mean, from movies with we did a program called The Autistic Gardener, which is a gardener with autistic gardener. Yes, it's an English program aired a few years ago, and where they get other autistics, young autistic people, and they go out and they do garden overhauls, you know, for people in England, which is kind of interesting to see that in action. We've done movies where, for example, I mean, the first mention of autism in popular culture in the movie was actually an Elvis Presley movie, believe it or not. We've definitely talked about those other reality programs where Love on the Spectrum, for example, which first got us into this, where they actually had young autistic people going on dates, and that is actually for all the sensationalism there, actually that program, it was a very strong educational tool because it allowed people to see autistic people as they really are, across the spectrum, and they made a very good effort to do that.
So, in your time with Autism Ontario, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
There are a lot of little ones that add up to the big ones for me. I mean, you know, we've been fortunate to represent autistic people, you know, across the province for 50 years now. I think that itself is a success story. You know, we were originally founded in 1973 by a group of concerned parents in the, you know, working out of a basement. And they started out as the Ontario Society for Autistic Children, and it was a grassroots organization. And to this day, we still reflect that through our our regional organizations. So I mean, being a part of that story, being a part of that tradition, being a part of Autism Ontario, that is certainly a success I can feel proud of being a part of.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Hey, my pleasure, Cameron. My pleasure.
Thanks.
I must say, my friends, Jennifer and Therabounce have absolutely the right idea, in so much as the goal is always to help a person with a disability of any kind at any age reach their best, but you're going to achieve better results, I'd imagine, if it's something that's fun and engaging. That's why so many people with acquired injuries turn to sport, once they realize they can still put on a great athletic performance, they can still be a part of the sport they love, a whole new world opens up to them. Some have even argued that it's just as intense and just as fast-paced as any able-bodied sport. I would absolutely agree with that. And I think it's very freeing, no matter what the activity, no matter what the age, just being in the moment. For a child, using a trampoline as therapy, they're not thinking necessarily, oh, this is going to strengthen my muscles, oh, I'm going to have better coordination down the road. No, they're just doing something fun and enjoyable for them in that moment. Is the long-term benefit something that will help them? We always hope that it is. But it's all a matter of finding the right way of reaching someone. Especially with acquired injuries and acquired disabilities, a person may have this false notion that there's nothing they can do. Their life is over. That defeatist attitude is never the correct one. I maintain there's always something that a person can do. They just get out there, give it their best shot. They find ways of adapting sport, recreational activities, even communication methods. People can always find some way of being a part of the things they love. Will it be exactly the same? Probably not. However, that's life. As we progress in something, we hope to achieve a better and better level. That's another reason I was pleased to have Jess on the show again. Working with a new trainer, using new techniques, will hopefully strengthen her as the games approach. Her attitude has always been, even if she didn't get to a medal level, she was proud of the performance she did give, beating her own personal best. And that's as it should be. An athlete isn't always necessarily driven by the shiniest trophy or the most recognition. They're driven by knowing that they are a strong, capable person. They can put on a great show for themselves, for their audiences, and for those who just want to be the next generation of athletes. People need to recognize that they're not just achieving for themselves. They're burning open those gates of backwards thinking that say a person can't do this or that. Once it's proven that something is possible, you have a very hard time arguing that it is not. Maybe we don't all play at the same level, but we all have the potential to achieve. We all have something we can contribute to this world. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.